Okay. Good afternoon. You can call me Dave. Archit, one of my co-authors from the computer sciences department couldn't be here, but Dale Carter, who wrote the RRD cache portion of the software that we'll be talking about, is here. So if you have questions outside the session, we're both available. So the title's a mouthful. It's really about two things. Application buffer cache management for performance, just general issues in operating systems and running applications on those having to do with the buffer cache and read-ahead behaviors. Specifically, we'll be looking at Linux. And then the real-world test case, the experimental work we did here, was with running the world's largest MRTG. And we have Toby here as well, the author of MRTG. So an outline, just things we'll be talking about in this talk, not necessarily exactly in this order, is I'll give you a little bit of background in MRTG and RRD tool, and I'll try to stick to the part that's specific to you needing the background you need to understand the talk after that. Then the problem that we're trying to address here, which is really a performance problem in measurement, and the motivation for why we pursued this work. Then what I'll describe to you is our investigative tools and methodology for how you can explore what is the bottleneck when it's buffer or read ahead related. And then we'll go into two approaches we took to solving this problem. The first one we call application level buffering or application level caching, where you actually modify the application to do things like the performance enhancing techniques that people have used in operating systems. And the other approach is to actually influence the operating system to do what you want, which we call application advice. We'll do a scalability study then, or we did a scalability study, so I'll report to you on the scalability of MRTG and RRD tool for large measurement systems, and we'll talk about the analysis of these results and using both an analytical model and simulation, the two primary techniques that that researchers have available to them that don't work when they're not able to work with real systems. Then we'll summarize. So these are typical MRTG graphs. This happens to be graphs of traffic between the computer sciences department on my campus and the campus network core. The things that are pertinent here are, well, we know that the RRD tool is good at keeping time series statistics at multiple time scales. So the top graph is 5-minute averages, the next graph is 30-minute averages, then 2-hour averages and daily averages. So it's very convenient to a consumer of this data because you have the same granularity of data in each, and it's not very jittery down in the daily averages because it's not produced using the 5-minute averages, for instance. The other thing, getting into why we're doing this study, is if you look, for instance, in the yearly graph down at the bottom, there's clearly some measurement data missing. This link had something like peak to 900 megabits per second of traffic. There's some spikes up there, but there's actually data missing there, and that was the phenomenon we were seeing when we were running MRTG on our campus network. So our campus network is something like this. What I'm showing you here is the core and distribution layers of our network. The University of Wisconsin-Madison has 45,000 people on the campus. We've got about 200 buildings, which you see represented here on the periphery of this network. The triangular core is there, and then two layers of distribution. What you're not seeing here is the true scope of the network. We have over 3,400 network devices centrally managed on this campus. They're out beyond this network, and that's the access layer. And there's 80,000 active switch ports on there. We're monitoring every single one of those and every link in here and recording the packet bit and error rates every 5 minutes. So that's what we're trying to do here. And to do this, we sized a system that we thought would be appropriate for this. We chose an 8-way Intel processor, or Intel Xeon 2.7 gigahertz, 16 gigabytes of main memory, storage array network with RAID 10, 16 disks, stripe of mirrors. So it's about the largest Intel-based system that you can buy. So given that problem and that system to run it on, how do we employ MRTG and RRD tool to do that? Well, let's start off on the left side of this graph where I'm showing you MRTG. You may have run MRTG, but basically the simplest way to think about it is that if you run it in daemon mode, it's just this little loop. It does two things. It's got two phases. I call it the pull targets phase and the write targets phase. So MRTG starts up, says, what do you want me to gather information about? Targets are basically interfaces in this. A target consists of an inbound and outbound statistic out on some piece of network equipment. And it reads that configuration, says, okay, I've got these, in our case, 176,000 targets that we want to collect. Then it goes into its pull targets phase, saying, I'm going to pull all these devices via SNMP to ask for those statistics. And once it gets the statistics, it goes into its write targets phase and writes them to individual RRD files. One RRD file per target. So I'm talking about 176,000 RRD files in one directory. then it sleeps for the balance of time if it's got any time left over in its 5-minute polar interval and comes around the loop again forever. So that's basically what MRTG does, a fairly simple Perl script. Now, RRD, the database portion of this is shown on the right, and what I'm showing you, this is actually to scale. This is the way the MRTG version we're using builds a database file. It's got two columns, DS0 and DS1, which are the two vertical portions separated by the dashed line. And what that is the inbound and outbound statistic. And then these horizontal sort of barrel shapes are the round robin archives, or the round robin portion of the database. And what it is starting from top to bottom. By the way, these are actually the exact same diagrams that are in the paper. So if you're having trouble reading them, they're right there in the proceedings. Starting from top to bottom, we've got that 5-minute average round robin archive. Then we've got the 30-minute, then the 2-hour, then the 1-day. And then the four below that are repeats at those same intervals of the maximum values observed during that time. So I show as dashed lines a typical update then. I said we go through this pull targets phase and write targets phase. Let's pretend we had one target. What you're going to do is, in the RRD files, go to the start of the file, read this meta information, the blue portion up at the top. You're going to seek to the next position to write the statistics that you've just observed in there. You're going to seek again to this lower blue area and write in there. So it's sparse writes across this file. And then you're going to seek back to the beginning and write some update information. So it's writing in those three areas. And those blue areas are the actual updated portions. So in general, as a database, this is a file-based database. It's a binary file-based database. Other databases, say, for instance, a relational database, something like MySQL or Oracle, what they'll do is MySQL is file-based as well, but some databases, they try to sidestep the operating system. You don't want the operating system buffer cache and read ahead getting in your way. They want to manage the data directly on the disk. What RRD does is says, I'm going to trust the operating system to do all this within a file. Therefore, you get the benefits and potential bottlenecks that the operating system has in file access. So going back to that network we're measuring and this large Linux system, so what's the problem? So given the MRTG as I laid it out to you there, there's two phases, this pull targets and write targets phase. The first thing I'm going to do in measuring a system like this when there's a performance problem is I'm going to measure those two important phases. How long does the polling take, and how long does the writing take? Because you can't get around the loop again unless you complete those two. And our goal is 5 minutes because we mean to record those statistics every 5 minutes. So on the horizontal axis here, I'm showing you the time of day. And on the vertical axis, so this is at 1 day's of measurements, on the vertical axis, the number of seconds elapsed, the black dots show the amount of time it took to poll these approximately 3,400 network devices that are out there. That's way down there at the bottom, well under a minute to poll all the devices. This is doing using approximately 20 MRTG daemons, distributing the work amongst those, so 20 threads. And then the red dots that are scattered upward from there are the total time, the poll plus the write phase. So this is where we want that to be under 300 seconds because we have a 5-minute performance goal. So clearly the system is not meeting the performance goal. And that's really the challenge here. How can we get MRTG and RRD to get those measurements down underneath 5 minutes? Using other commonly available statistics on the system, for instance, the CPU, here's what was going on during that same 24 hours. The white at the bottom is the user CPU time, the gray is the system CPU time, and the red is I/O wait. So we see approximately 20% user CPU, 10% system CPU, and this other 30%, or the other half of CPU is I/O wait. That's a problem. And this is something in the network operations community that people have observed. They run large MRTG and RRD systems, they get a lot of I/O wait. Seems like I can only handle tens of thousands of these files. So that's sort of the rumor in the network operations community. You can get maybe to 60, 90,000. Somebody say, oh, I got 100,000, but that was about it. If we look at another graph, similarly the time along the horizontal axis and operations per second here along the vertical axis of disk I/O, well, we have writes during this continually updating, writes approximately 15,000 writes per second, but the reads is way up there, like 80 to 90,000 reads per second. Now, if you think back to that way we had that RRD file, we go into three positions in the average update. We read a block, and we write the same blocks, three blocks. Why would the reads be so much more than the writes? Well, what's going on here is it suggests that there's something going on actually with the buffer cache not being effective. I mean, if your blocks are being read and they're in buffer cache, you shouldn't have to read them again. You'd expect exactly the opposite, the writes to be more than the reads. So just seeing this problem, Dale took a look at this problem, and what he said is, well, it hurts when you write in RRD, especially with these hundreds of thousands of targets. So let's change RRD tool, or let's intercept it and see if we can change the write behavior of it so that we don't run into this I/O performance bottleneck. So what we're showing you here is a diagram of his implementation called RRD cache. And let's start from the left to right. On the left side, you see an array of MRTG daemons. I said in our case that we had 20 of them. And usually, they would go all the way over to the right side and use the RRD tool API to write to those RRD files way over on the right side. Instead, what Dale does is he interposes this RRD cache namespace and replaces the RRD calls with his own. And that's what the second row of rectangles there represents, the RRD cache library intercepting the updates. And he puts a RAM disk in between. Thanks. So we're at this RAM disk here. And what he does with the RAM disk is the RRD cache library takes the arguments to update and appends them to a journal file. So he's getting better locality of updates here. He's always appending to these files in this RAM disk, and of course it's a RAM-based file system, so there's not going to be any disk I/O at that point. Then he introduces another thread, a thread called the RRD cache writer, which periodically examines this RAM disk area or this journal, and using the RRD cache library, it writes through the RRD tools to write those arguments, just basically call the original RRD tool as if it had done it over here, but it only does it once per hour. So what we're doing is I/O scheduling here. And then lastly, just to give you the full tour of this, there's just to flesh out the API completely, that's the update. There's a read component, of course. We want to be able to graph from these statistics. So what Dale's showing you here is that you can call this API through here and cause the data to be flushed immediately so that you can read these files normally. Or if you don't need online data, the most accurate data, you're just using trending data and hours worth data or years worth data is old enough, you can go straight through the RRD tool API and read these essentially stale files over here. So what I want to point out here just in general, what Dale's done is he's used three or four common operating system strategies to improve performance here. What he's done is he's introduced a cache. He's used RAM-based file system. He's introduced a thread. This is asynchronous I/O. And the thread does rescheduling or reordering of these writes. That's I/O scheduling, which is also in the operating system. And then ultimately just writes it to the original thing. So this is really taking the responsibilities of the operating system and putting them in the application. Well, how effectively does it do that? It does really well. So these are the same sort of graphs we saw before. Now, MRTG performance, how long does it take to complete those cycles? Well, the polling phase is still way down there because the polling phase wasn't accepted. But the update phase, it's lightning fast now because it's updating in RAM. So pretty much everything's happening in less than 60 seconds. Looks wonderful. The CPU usage, well, when we're not doing the periodic flushes to the disk, we look golden. I mean, there's no I/O wait at all. Then on the hour, we do these coalesced writes or grouped writes from the logs to the RRD files, and you see the evidence that there's paging activity going on then. And then similarly, that's reflected in disk I/O. So really good performance, and we meet our performance goal here. We can measure our network using this technique. Now, at the same time, Archit and I were looking at this from a different perspective. What's going on in the operating system? Can we change what's going on in some lesser way to get the performance we want? Because it seems like a Perl script, you know, chunking through a few numbers on a machine with 8 processors and 16 gig of RAM should be able to do this just with the existing RRD tool. So what we used is these tools, the System Activity Reporter, SAR command. It's common on Unix systems. One thing differently that we did that you might want to look at is there's a tool called KSAR, which is a Java tool that can consume the textual output of SAR and show it to you graphically. So that was useful to see information individually or immediately. That the URL for that is in the paper, by the way. And then we're introducing to you two new commands. So we wrote a command called fincore for file incore you run it with file names as arguments, and it shows you which blocks of those files are in core memory, presumably because they're in the buffer cache. This is something that otherwise would be unavailable to you. It's not visible to a user or system administrator. And then we wrote another command called fadvise. And what fadvise does, it's just a simple call, you know, calling a system call underneath, but what it can be used to do, at least under Linux, is forcibly evict a file's pages from the buffer cache. You can tell it that I'm no longer interested in this file and it evicts it. So this is really useful if we want to run repeated experiments and influence the read-ahead and buffer cache behavior. I can use this to clear the slate between them without having to reboot the machine or unmount the file system. So given that, now let's go take a look at our binary file that is our database, the RRD file, and let's talk about the Linux read-ahead and caching behavior in the context of an RRD file. So the RRD file on the right, if you remember, the blue regions are the update areas. There's seeks and reads and writes represented by these arrows over here, and just across the various round robin archives in the file, so a sparse set of writes. In the middle column there, let's walk through this. What's going to happen is we're going to open the file. We start here. We read this block. We seek over here. We write to the statistics to this portion. Well, what did Linux do when we read this block? Linux said, okay, you're reading a file at the beginning. And as a performance optimization, it said, I'm going to read the first 16 blocks of that file for you. So it read right down to here. So first off, Linux reads 16 blocks when we wanted one. But it's expecting, because we started reading from the beginning of the file, and it anticipates sequential access that you want those. So then when you come to reference this second interesting hot block here, it's already in buffer cache. Great. Then we go and to update this. Now, at first, that's not there because it's beyond the 16 bytes. And Linux says, wait a second. You just did a seek, and now you're doing it right over here. It looks like random access. I'm going to back off. Thank you. I'm going to back off the read ahead from 16 pages down to 8 pages. So it reads these 8 pages in. Now we've read in, we've accessed 2 blocks, and we're accessing the third. We've read in almost the entire MRTG or RRD file into the buffer cache. What we really want is these hot blocks to be in. That's what's necessary for the application to work. So if we run the numbers on this, at the time I did the study, we had 160,000 RRD files that were active in that directory. It took 25 pages of the 26 pages in a defaultly sized MRTG file, which would require approximately 16 gigabytes of buffer cache. Our system has 16 gigabytes of main memory, therefore we do not have 16 gigabytes of buffer cache, and this causes cache churn. You have to evict some of the content that was in there before so that you can fit this in, and that's this unexpected high read page in rate that we saw. In the ideal situation, if we can get it to do just what we want, just read the hot pages, do the same math, and we come up with something like 3 gigabytes of space. And I think the difference with the pages is what you have to remember is there's a structure to files. They have an inode and an indirect block. So on average, you're going to access something like these extra blocks because you know an inode has to come into the buffer cache and also this indirect block if you access beyond the 12th block of the file. This RRD file that we have on the left, if we turn it on its side, this is what then the access pattern or the distribution of accesses to portions of the file looks like. 100% of the time it accesses this first block, and in these decreasing percentages it accesses these other blocks. So you can see it could really benefit from just reading in the portions that are used most often. So what's the solution? How do we tell the operating system to do what we want? Turns out there's a function called fadvise that's recently introduced in a number of Unixes. This is a hint to the operating system saying, I'm going to access this file randomly. This concept was proposed as early as 1980. The Pilot operating system from Xerox PARC had a feature like this. Stonebreaker, a database researcher, proposed in 1980 that operating systems should have this so that you can build databases upon them. And lo and behold, in 2005, it comes out. So anyway, the arguments to it is something like you can say sequential, you can say random. You also tell it an offset and a run length. So you can say at offset 1024 bytes, the next 1024 bytes are something that I'm interested in. Boy, tough audience. So I said earlier that we're going to explore this in a number of ways using both simulation and analytical modeling. So what I did is went and recorded the page activity on a file and then replayed it in a least recently used buffer cache simulator. And what we see is if we use the default read ahead in this red case, this is on the vertical axis the page operations that we see in each update interval, and this is the number of buffer cache pages that would be available to per RRD file. So for instance, you would to get to these drop-off points, like this looks really attractive. We want to lower to something like 5 paging operations. We need something like 18 pages per file, and that's getting up near that 16 gig memory limit. But if we turn off that default read ahead, we get this behavior, where as little as something like 8 pages per file, you get almost zero page activity. So that's what we want to see in the real system to alleviate the performance problem. We won't go into this analytical model, but what you can see from doing an analytical model or going through the exercise of producing this is that you look at the terms that are used to determine the paging rate. In this paging rate calculation, one of the terms that's not in there is the size of the RRD file. That's great news because you can resize your RRD file to retain data as long as you want. It's not going to really influence the paging rate. The other thing that you can see from doing this analytical model is that there's this summation. This equation is dominated by this summation, which counts across the RRAs in it. So this is just saying that the structure of your RRD file, the RRAs that you choose to be in there, especially at the most frequent update interval, are the ones that heavily influence the paging rate. And in the case of this older MRTG that I was using, there was two RRAs that were being updated at the 5-minute interval, and that dominates the rate calculation. So now let's go back and use that the tool FN Core, just that you can go download it and run it on your system. You can say for a given set of files, you're going to get this kind of distribution. Without using FAdvise, if I run FN Core on the thousands or hundreds of thousands of RRD files, it went in there and said, okay, I have something like almost all my RRD files, or something like 80%, they have 27 pages in Core. And this 20% down here, there wasn't enough memory to fit those. So this is a bad situation. There's space here. That means some of the files didn't have enough memory for them to be cached. On the other hand, this green solid line is using the FAdvise API. We run it on there. And what we see is we've moved this bottleneck indication way over here and see that after running the system for a while, something like 70% of the files had only about eight or nine pages in Core. And we had extra memory, and the rest of them, we had even more than that. Because there's no space under this down here, we know we're performing well here. So this is a tool you can use on your own for any application, just to go see how much of the file is in Core or not. So this is the same graph I showed you before, the MRTG performance before we did any of these changes, and after using just this change to say, I'm going to do random access, that's what we get. Now, one of the things you see here is there's periodic behavior, something to do with, like, for instance, at midnight. That's something we'll talk about in a second about the future performance limitations for RRD. So the system CPU after looks great. Now let's do a scalability study. Let's take the system. We made our meta performance goal, but I want to tell all you guys how big can you go with this thing. So we tripled the size of our RRD system and scaled it up to 480,000 RRD files. And this is also over time. We cumulatively added over a while. And what I'm claiming here is we're in really good shape up here till 320,000. We're all underneath the 5 minutes, so we can run a system on this hardware, 320,000 live RRD files, no problem. After that, we get some latencies having to do with aggregation in RRD that push it up to this. At this one point in time, we're approaching 10 minutes for update, so that's not acceptable. So then we said, well, that was just with the simpler of the methods, FAdvise. Now let's go back and take Dale's code and this code and mix it together and see what happens. Now, this is a CPU, by the way, during that time. So mixing the two techniques together, we get this kind of performance out of it. We scale way out to here, and then things fall apart, you know, around there. So we're getting into the 400,000 RRD files. What we're seeing with the CPU at the time is that in both those cases, the CPU grows near 100%, and that's our next performance bottleneck. So as in most system performance work, you alleviate one bottleneck and you push up to the next. And so I'm seeing a CPU bottleneck that's based on the Perl script, and I'm seeing an I/O performance bottleneck that we're approaching based on these aggregation intervals that happen in RRD. So our contributions are we've given you two new tools you can run on your system, the FN Core command and the FAdvise command to do experiments, to observe what your system is doing. We've given you an analytical model, which seems obscure, but what it can do is tell you how much memory you need given a set of RRD files for a specific kind of RRD file. So if you're using Cricut, it would be different than MRTG, but we can discuss offline how you adapt to those things. And then we've given you two RRD tool performance optimizations, one that Dale wrote that's similar to what Toby and a number of other people in the community had designed on paper. And then we've also given you this application advice patch to RRD, which Toby has integrated just today into a release of RRD tool that's available now. So these are the people that helped us out with this project. As I said, Toby just released this morning. RD21 to 25 has this change in it. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take those. Could you use the mic, please?
Systems currently support FAdvise.
Which operating systems support FAdvise? So my target operating system was Linux. It was Linux 2.6.9. You need to be something on like 2.6.9 or near there, maybe 2.6.7. What you need to watch out for is some operating systems have the call, but it does nothing. It got adopted by the open group as a POSIX API, so the actual call that I'm using is POSIX FAdvise. The FAdvise apparently appeared in BSD at some point by the name FAdvise first. So really, you have to look very carefully. Both Toby and I, when we were working on this, we looked in the source code to see that the functions were actually fleshed out and see what they actually do. But what's cool about it, with the tools like FNCore, you can just try it out and run FNCore and see what's in cache, and you know if it's working or not. I don't know other than BSD and Linux, though, that what actually has it. Other questions?
So on the RD cache list, first, is that released?
RD cache is released. Okay. The URL's in the paper.
Have you contemplated crossing the functionality with that of something like the functionality of memcached so that you could basically enable RD cache to use your cache across a pool of machines?
I haven't contemplated that, and I haven't heard of memcached, but the proposal was something like look at integrating something like RD cache with memcached to use a distributed pool of buffer across machines.
Right. So the thing that I've been thinking about kind of in my head is a pie in the sky goal would be having something like your RD cache system actually be a memcached server such that you have one machine that's doing your collection and you're storing to RD cache, but that actually goes over the network and gets written to some random disk on some other machine.
Okay.
So you can spread your load across a pool
options.
Of machines.
Yeah, what we're doing here is saying what's the minimum you can do to get the performance, and then Dale's saying what can you do beyond that that's exotic in the application, and you're saying where can you grow beyond that if you have to go outside the system. That's really interesting. You're going to write the paper for next year with 1 million RD files. And Toby?
Have you looked at setting the time where a dirty buffer can stay in the kernel up? Normally it's about 30 seconds. So if you erase that, you could roll multiple updates into the same buffer without it being ever written out to disk, which essentially is the same as your buffer does, but done by the OS.
Right. And so Toby's saying change in Linux, it's PD flush, BD flush, up the update thread in a kernel. Can you just change that behavior? The only caveat is that, remember, you're changing this for the entire system. What is the risk of running with a buffer cache that might keep something in memory for an hour, like the password file that you just wrote or something? It gets into, do you dedicate the system just to RD? How do you make this trade-off so that it works for lots of applications? We have a number of, there's an appendix to the paper that has recommendations about potentially tuning the system, and that would be yet another recommendation that you could play with to try to get the operating system to be your database. Well, thank you.